We're going to talk about something else that's affected New Yorkers. Thanks very much, Femi. We're going to talk about that blackout that happened 3 years ago. And when the lights went out, I'm sorry, 5 years ago, my goodness, and 50 million people were without power, finding themselves in the dark, and that's 50 million people in the U.S. and Canada. As soon as terrorism was ruled out, the lights were barely back on before major questions were being asked about the antiquated power system that was never set up to serve so many people. So where is the power grid system today? Have any of those questions been answered, and is the system any smarter? For at least some answers, joining us now is Bracken Hendricks, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks very much for having me on.
And what did we learn about what was broken, and how are we trying to fix it?
Well, you know, what we have today with our grid network is really, it's a 19th century technology. It hasn't changed very much since it was invented by Tesla, the scientist, in the late 1800s. And it's now powering a 21st century economy that's changed tremendously. So what we saw with the blackout in the Northeast was a very, very costly situation where we haven't been investing in modernizing and updating our infrastructure. It cost billions of dollars. We just heard that story about a small businessman and the kind of impact it has when you lose access to power. But there's been some research done by the solar energy industry that if there were just small amounts of solar energy at particular points around the grid, you could have prevented the kind of cascading power failure that happened with that blackout. So as we think about where the grid is going, we have the opportunity to bring together modern information technology, communications technology, and turn it together with our energy infrastructure.
Now, Bracken, this is Catherine Lanfer. Let's cut to the chase here. Who pays for this?
Well, actually, it needs to be paid for with some real public investment up front, but it's the type of spending that ultimately is a real investment. I think it's ultimately a public-private partnership.
Well, here's what I'm getting to, though. When you look at people who are early adopters, they've put up their own solar panels, and not all of us have the money to retrofit a house, as it were.
Well, and that's one of the barriers to the adoption of the smart grid is that making the kinds of investments that the public sector or the utilities or that and consumers ultimately need to make, it's probably not cost effective if you're just trying to modernize your electrical meter or just enable installation of solar power on your roof. But once you start putting together all of these technologies, the payback is enormous. It ultimately is going to create tremendous cost savings and tremendous new economic opportunity to have this intelligent grid. What a smart grid is going to do, it's going to enable the distribution system of electricity to share information back and forth from the homeowner back to the power plant so that you can do things like have real-time pricing where you actually pay the cost of the energy when it's produced. So if you are using peak load during the height of the day, it might be more expensive, but it also creates the opportunity to do your laundry in the evening and realize a cost savings.
Is any of this actually happening today?
There's a very advanced smart grid in Italy that has, I think, 200,000 homes on it. In Austin, Texas, they've been moving for the last several years to get smart metering, these digital meters that allow more flexible pricing and really encourage energy conservation and allow homeowners to realize cost savings, as well as the opportunity to connect energy, renewable energy appliances like solar panels to the grid and sell energy back. There's also the city of Boulder, Colorado, has just announced a very forward-looking utility out there, Xcel Energy, and they're going to make the whole city of Boulder, Colorado, a smart grid pilot. So this is on the cusp of happening. And one of the really exciting things...
But Bracken, let me just stop you there, though, because I'm curious about... Was there any sense of urgency following, it was an enormous collapse in 2005 when half of the northeastern seaboard was in a blackout. It spread all the way to the Midwest, and then it headed up to Canada. I'm surprised that there haven't been more of these innovative programs implemented.
Well, What we're looking at is a very fundamental change in how we view the electrical grid. And I'm actually not surprised that it's taking a little while to catch on, but I think that what we're seeing now, a few years out from the blackout, is that there is real momentum and the technology is really there. Things like smart meters, things like integration of renewable energy to maintain stable load, and also some of the economics of just rising prices of natural gas and coal and the energy that we produce. Suddenly there is a very, very powerful motivation to get the kinds of radical improvements in energy efficiency that are possible. There's a really exciting feature of the smart grid, which is when you really get this whole distributed network, it's really like shifting from a mainframe computer to a network of connected desktops. We're going to have multiple pathways for energy to flow, and the utility will be able to reach out and access energy efficiency as a new source of generation. So when they need that extra unit of peak power in the hottest day of August, when everyone's running their air conditioners, they'll have the tools to bring down demand and with consumers, shutting off water heaters if people have given their permission to reduce their load, those sorts of things, or accessing stored energy that may be stored in batteries from solar panels, or ultimately.
So essentially, what you're saying is the new technology would just radically increase efficiency.
Absolutely. Efficiency and the integration of renewables, it'll allow people to do things like there's a new generation of cars called plug-in electric hybrid cars, which are being discussed. They're really exciting technology. GM has something called the Volt that they're going to be introducing in a couple years. Basically, they can run for 40 miles and use no gasoline. They cut carbon emissions by 30%.
40 miles and no gasoline?
No gasoline because they're using electricity. So they get equivalent of 100 miles for every gallon of gasoline they use. That's really exciting, but it means that those cars are going to be drawing energy from the grid. So what that's going to require is that we have controls in the charging system for the cars, so that the cars only charge at night when there's excess capacity and not during the peak of the day.
Right.
But the cool thing here is in the full smart grid, those cars, once you take them to work and plug them in, if the building needs extra capacity, suddenly the garage is going to become a generator. It's going to become a major power source.
Bracken, we've got to go, Bracken, but you're almost describing something from the Jetson. Bracken
it's
Hendrix.
It's futuristic, but it's coming down the pike.
It's
in the
coming
next
down the pike. Bracken.
Unplug from the grid, okay?
Bracken Hendrix, thank you so much.
It's been great talking with you. Have
you
a good day.
You too. Bracken Hendrix, a very excited man with a preview for the future. A senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. A garage turning into a generator. It's an interesting thought.
She noticed his voice just kept getting more and more intense.
Yes, no doubt.
Anyhow,
we're always on at The Takeaway. You can catch up with us on Facebook, Friend Feed, or Twitter.
I'm Catherine Lanfer, in for John Hockenberry, and reminding you that if you've missed anything on our show, it's all on thetakeaway.org.
And I'm Adoree Doji, and this is The Takeaway.
Plugged in.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.